Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. Now listen, you're listening to the Casterbridge podcast with a K. Don't worry about other podcasts. Let them gawp, let them gape. Yes, did you know that we're available on Casterbridge.com, iTunes, Stitcher.com and Audioboo? Well, you do now. Good, isn't it?
Ladies and gentlemen, hello, and welcome to another podcast. James McLean and Brian Terranova Solo Nova are with me.
Hello, I'm going to use that name now.
Okay, fair enough. And as you can see, they are here, but they're not in a particularly polite mood. They're not saying hello to you or anything. So let me say hello to you. Hello. How are you? Did you enjoy Time Heist? Brian, did you enjoy Time Heist?
I did.
Good. James, did you enjoy Time Heist?
Yes, I did.
Good. Let's move on then. Now, so we're going to talk about Time
New
Heist.
New topic.
Which is the fifth episode of... Is it the fifth? Yeah, the fifth episode of Doctor Who Series 8. I have to say, I am quite intrigued by The Caretaker. I haven't seen the trailer, but we're not going to talk about that because James hasn't seen the trailer, and
No, I haven't.
He doesn't like to see those kind of things.
I don't like watching trailers. No,
although he doesn't like River Song, he swears by her philosophy of
she's a pastiche of
you,
a trended philosophy in the first place. You can't give her the credit of actually having sort of innovated that philosophy of spoilers, because I got this philosophy before she came into the show because of the show and its terrible trailers, which gave away too much information.
Is she a pastiche of you, James?
No.
Okay.
No, I think there's differences. The hair, I'm presuming the genitalia. I can't say for certain. I think I'm a little more charming. I don't come across like a dirty auntie at Christmas. Unless I've had a few drinks.
I have to say, I've never had a dirty auntie come across me at Christmas.
No, well, you're lucky. It's an uncomfortable and tumble drying experience.
Indeed, I'm sure she's in. You may know this, dear listener, and Brian and James probably know that Alex Kingston is in a show on ITV with Rhys Shearsmith and Noel Clarke called Chasing Shadows, which is quite interesting show. Noel Clarke's probably the best of the bunch in it. I think it's probably fair to say. It's worth a watch if you're free on a Thursday night, if there's nothing else to do. I mean, I wouldn't take any time out of your schedule to watch it, especially. Eminently watchable, though. So, Time Heist, in which the Doctor and Clara are plunged into an unusual and mysterious situation because they don't know what's going on. They've had their memories temporarily wiped, or short-term memory wiped, and they're guided by character... Sorry, were you having a shave there? Is it shave time already?
Did we lose time?
Shave time. No, that was my phone. A small little socialite thing going on.
Oh, I see. Right, it sounded like you were shaving. It's funny enough, I had a shave before the podcast, because I have a shave before every podcast. Or a shower. I sometimes have a shower before the podcast as well. Because I like to think I'm talking to you in person, you see.
Well, this is uncomfortable for me this week because I'm on a phone rather than a headset. I'm used to both of you being sort of deeply entrenched in my ear holes. So to have you sort of slightly tinny on a phone is an uncomfortable
experience. I think I might have misheard that, James.
Yeah? Well, that's where you usually sit, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe you did.
So if the listener has recovered from these various interruptions, Time Heist! We've got Keeley Hawes in there. Now, I went into Time Heist thinking, I'll just watch it. At the very least, I've got Keeley Hawes to look at. And I ended up really, really enjoying it in a kind of season 18 kind of a way.
Season 18 type of way.
In a kind of Fourth Doctor and Romana kind of a way. It kind of felt like it could have slipped in there. I really, really enjoyed it. I don't think I've really, really enjoyed an episode that much, and I did really enjoy Into the Dalek. But this it just felt there was lots of fun. And there's been some criticism that it perhaps wasn't all that deep or meaningful, and someone else has commented that there's perhaps too much going on. But I would disagree with both of those things. I think you can take a lot from it. And as I say, it was an enjoyable way to spend 45 to 50 minutes.
I don't see why everyone has to be deep, though. I mean,
well, exactly.
I love watching Mission Impossible, which is obviously a, you know, almost doing the same sort of story pastiche. And there was no character depth in it at all. It was intentionally shallow. And, you know, why do you have to constantly have to have a deep story?
It goes along with what a friend and I have been saying a lot lately, where every season finale that Russell and Moth have done has always been to outdo the last one, where you're eventually, even, matter of fact, we should say they probably already did go to the point of where else can you go in Russell's era, when really all they need to do is just tell a fun, good story. They don't need to try and outdo another story. Like, I don't need every episode we watch to try and be something that's just more massive than the last, just so long as they tell a good story. And I think that's what they did here. I think they told a really good story.
But that's it, isn't it? Because you could do a story like this as a finale, but just at the very end, the chair to turn around, and it's not Keeley Hall's, it's Matthew Waterhouse or something. And that's your, you know, that's your finale teaser or cliffhanger. So you don't have to do a story to have something that can hook people in or turn them away, maybe in that case. I hope not. In your final story, it doesn't have to be mind-blowing, yeah. But
although I will say, I don't know about you guys, but I agree, Tony. With this one, I kind of found a lot of it was predictable. It is a big fly. No, but I found some of the story to be predictable. Did you guys find that? Like, it was fun. It was enjoyable. So I'm not knocking it because it was a good adventure. But like, I kind of had guessed some of the things like straight away. And
well, we knew there was time travel involved, didn't we? Because it's Doctor Who.
Yeah, it's not so much that. It's like, for instance, I guessed that the Doctor was the architect. I guessed that they were there to free the monster that was using its psychic powers. I guessed that that was the case. I had the
architect at the back of my mind that it might be the Doctor. I also guessed that those teleporters were teleporters and not
suicide
devices as well. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't mind that, because honestly, like, that's one of the things that I really enjoy when watching any TV show, is whether or not I can guess what's going on. You know, to give you an example of a bad way to guess that, this is when you watch a crime drama and you see a guest star in the episode and you're like, they did it, mainly because they're a popular actor and why else would they be in the episode? That's bad. When you watch an episode like this and you're sitting there like, I'll bet those things are teleporters, I'll bet the architect is the Doctor, and I'll bet you that they're here to save this monster, that they're not bad things. That's all of you just like trying to figure out what's going on. Where at the same time, the only thing that bugs me a little bit, and it's not even like episode criticism, but more so I guess in a sense possibly Moff criticism, not to be too picky here, but it seems like he doesn't really do the whole alien invasion or aliens are bad guys thing very often at all. The aliens are either accidentally evil or just being abused themselves, you know. So it was a little bit of a, so you see the alien that's all like tied up, well obviously they're there to save the thing, rather than it's actually bad and that's why it's tied up, you know. So it was a little minor thing, just because it's getting to the point where humans are the most evil thing in the universe, which, you know, in a sense makes sense. But I do enjoy alien invasion stories, you know. I enjoy seeing actual bad guys in stories rather than just coincidental or incidental things.
It's a fair point, because there was really no reason to have had to have it in chains within the story context of what you see at the end, because presumably even if he didn't have his chains, because he seemed to be able to walk about anyway, there was no way he could get his partner out of that vault. So in theory, I guess. I mean, I can see why they had it to emphasize, but they didn't need to emphasize it, because the plot could have easily done without it. So you could have hidden that fact that he was involuntarily stuck there.
Yeah, and if you had taken the chains away, then I probably wouldn't have immediately thought that they're there to save this thing, because it would have been a free walking alien. It would have seemed like it belonged there.
Yes, you know? Exactly. Yeah, I think that's a good point. Yeah. No, I know. I thought it was good.
Not to knock the story, because the story was fun, and I loved the direction of it too. I loved how they actually like edited it like a heist film. You know, like I like when they do those kind of genre type stuff. So it was a great episode. It was a lot of fun.
And there was a lot made of a limited set as well. We had a few corridors reused
in
quite ingenious kind of ways as well.
So, you know what, speaking of the direction and the editing, though, like one other thing that I noticed that I just felt wrong to me was when the in the beginning when the briefcase is about to open and then they cut to the intro and then they come back and then we see the briefcase is open and they get their message that they're supposed to rob the bank and then it cuts to Keeley Hawes in her office. I really felt that the intro was misplaced. The intro should have been after they were there, you need to rob the bank. That would have been a like, what the heck moment is going on? Intro music and then cut to her. Like, it felt really odd that they put it like, they kind of put it within the scene. It just felt weird. It felt oddly placed to me. And that maybe because I'm used to editing films and so on. But I don't know. It just felt like a really weird spot for me.
I still find, and it's a very, very trivial point, that the new theme really does lack a sting. That when it sort of comes in, it sort of limps in. It doesn't even feel like there's no presence to it kicking in. I'm so used to that in Doctor Who that
it doesn't really need one because we're not going to need multi-parters, are we?
No, but you still need one to sort of emphasise. I mean, obviously you need it for America more than here, but I'm a great believer that your intro, in a sense, is almost like your anthem going to war. It is a signal of something for the audience. It's, you know,
this is that why you mentioned America?
Well, I mean, for America, in the sense, often you'll have, you know, there'll be an ad break that it'll be sitting in between. So you've got. But I'm saying, regardless, an effect of the intro, which wasn't intended, is that it has a presence, and I think, you know, a very powerful still.
It pumps you up.
Fanfare, yes, it pumps you up, and this theme doesn't have that, so it just sort of gets a little flat.
Yeah, no, exactly, and that's why I also felt that moving the intro to that other point would have been more of a pumped up vibe.
Yeah.
But I agree, this thing would have helped that out there. It's kind of like going back to season 18 now, but and really you can go back even further with Doctor Who, all the classic Doctor Who, when that Sting music comes in right as the cliffhanger happens, it's kind of like that moment. It gets you excited for what's coming next, you know. Whereas instead of having to wait a week for the next episode, you know, it just gets you excited. Like, for instance, somebody turning the channel and they're new to Doctor Who, they might not be checking out this program. They might be sitting there saying, well, you know, maybe I'll check this out. You know, you get that kind of what the heck moment. You get that sting. You get pumped up for it, you know. And then if it's not there, somebody just might go, oh, okay, and change the channel. And that's extreme. But I mean, like that, it is a way to draw somebody in, I think.
Well, I mean, you've got, I'm trying to think of some off the top of my head, but what I always liked with the Doctor Who, which as you say was at the end rather than the beginning, is a bit like, and I know I mentioned this last week, was like season one Space 1999 sting, which was where they would run a sort of timpani drum roll in the actual episode that shift into the actual intro, so you get a nice segue, a sort of musical build up, and then the hit of the intro sequence. And you get that with obviously Doctor Who in the end episodes of Doctor Who, you'd have, and you'd get it in the new series, you'll get the sting that will cross into the we'll cut over to the actual visuals of the intro or the outro, and I think it's a very effective way to do it. And it just doesn't work in this case. And if you, as you say, if you've got a very poor outro to your intro, it just feels like a water dripping rather than a big explosive. We're here. This is our big story. We're proud of it.
Well, it's almost like filling a quota too. You know, the TV show is supposed to have an intro. Let's put it here. You know, rather than here we go, this is the perfect placement for it. This is the perfect place for the sting. You know, this will get them motivated. You know, it does just because I was wondering this the other day. I was watching a show that on DVD, you couldn't skip the intro. You have to fast forward through it. They didn't put a chapter marker at the end of the intro. So when you're kind of like marathoning a TV show, it's nice. It's nice when you're watching them individually to have the intro there. It gets you into the show and so on. But when you're marathoning the show, it can be one of those things where you're like, I just want to go ahead and skip this bit. And now, Christ, setting this up, I've lost my thought. But it really was just one of those things where, I was wondering why TV shows even need theme music intros anymore. You know, for instance, I'm watching Midsommar Murders. And I love the fact that they, every episode, they integrate their theme song without stopping the story. They always overlay new information, new bits of the story during their intro, and I think that works so well. It would be it's probably the only show that I know of that I don't ever skip the intro, mainly because you can't.
Should we just start a podcast about Midsommar Murders?
We probably should. I'm sorry. I keep doing that to us.
But at the same time, on the other end of the scale, you've got ones like Battlestar Galactica, the revisioned one, where they open season one with a longer montage of this episode within the intro. Very akin again to Space 1999 season one, actually. And then they took it out for the beginning of season two, and there was a big outcry that people wanted it, so they put it back in again. So the intro can be quite important still.
True.
It can be quite important to the viewer. I must admit, if you do get a show with a very sort of quick intro which doesn't carry any power to it, never touch it. It does affect me. It really bugs me. I think because when I in the 80s, when shows were terrible, sometimes the intro was the best bit. It would be the most exciting bit in the whole show. So maybe that's why I sort of got very much into intros.
Yeah, I mean, I like them. I think that, I guess maybe the difference is that some shows you watch, they're just not impressive. And I sit there and I think, why are they not there? But or why are they there, rather? And something like Doctor Who, it's always... I think we talked about this before in another podcast. For instance, starting from season 18 through that whole version of that new introduced theme tune, it's one of the rare Doctor Who ones that if I'm watching a full like four episodes together in one sitting, I let the intro play because I just love hearing it. I love the feel of that theme tune. Whereas other ones, when I get to the end, I'll go ahead and skip the end credits and start the next episode straight away just to get the story moving along. So there is something certainly to be said in that. There are certain shows where certainly, you know, the X-Files, it has a great vibe to watch their intro, you know, so I get that. I guess just sometimes that's the way I was thinking. And maybe that's what it is with this one. I don't know what it is with this one. It is lacking something and you know, forget the actual title sequence itself. The tune itself, I agree, is lacking something this time around.
Yeah. Some other tiny little bits in Time Heist we'd like to just bring up, because they talk about the trivial stuff and people have already complained that we're grumbling again when, you know, the show was actually pretty good. You noticed some of on the little montage clip on the screen showing the Varys and Absalom Dak being one of the characters that appeared up as criminals from his memory banks.
Which I know you wanted to talk about something cool, but I have a minor grumble there. Yeah. I don't mind him being there whatsoever. I don't mind him being a drawing, but I think if they were going to do that, he should have been a wanted poster rather than a mugshot, because a mugshot that's a drawing of a character just took away from it a little bit. Everybody else having a mugshot with the numbers, I think that was fine. But like I said, I do not mind it being a cartoon drawing, because what are you going to do? Hire an actor unless you dress them exactly the same, who's really going to get it? But if they had made it be a wanted poster, I think that would have sold that a little bit better. Otherwise, it was cool. I mean, like, what do we have? I went through it. I did a freeze frame of it because I was really curious to see how many were in it. And it looks like there were 10 different Doctor Who and spin-off references in there.
Oh, nice. I've not actually gone back and checked. That was the one that caught me. And I thought, another extended media reference, which I'm quite like Moffat for doing these little things where he's not sort of trying to tie the extended media's into the continuity and clog it up. He's just making sort of nice little nods to its existence, which I think is a good approach.
No, it was cool. It was a lot of fun, and it was like watching Patrick Troughton in the Robin Hood story. You know, something flashes up that's familiar, and it just makes you like want to go watch the episode again and catch the rest. You know, but I have to admit there was one of them in there. And it was a weird thing, because there was one in there, I swore I knew it, and it was one of the first faces, it was the first alien one that they had shown, and I was really racking my brain, because I didn't want to skip on to the others till I figured it out, and that's when I realized that they weren't just using, like, Doctor Who straight-up references, because I even was like, okay, is this from another science fiction show, like, is it from Stargate or something, because I know this alien, what is it from, but it turned out to be from the Sarah Jane Adventures. So it was neat. So they had Sarah Jane Adventures, they had Torchwood, they had the comic book there, and then of course they had both new and classic series stuff, and it was a lot of fun. It was neat to see. So yeah, that was good. I even like that character, actually. It was when they were in the TARDIS and he said to the doctor, you know, if you ever need help with another job again, I actually thought, like, you know, as much as I actually really am liking Danny, I kind of like this other guy. Why can't this guy stay?
You know? I didn't mind him. His hair annoyed me. They'd have to change his hair, but
at least the side where he has no hair.
Yes, it didn't quite work for me somehow. He looked a little too slick in a lot of ways, and for what I'd how I'd visualize that sort of character. But yeah, I agree. I enjoyed him. I thought he played quite well.
Yeah.
What about the shapeshifter?
The shapeshifter.
Yeah. You mean Rogue? What?
What was she called?
Rogue from the X-Men, the one who can't touch people for fear of draining their powers.
Oh, yeah,
this girl can't touch people for fear of turning directly into them.
Yeah.
Her. She was good, and it was okay. It was just one of those things where I'm like, they didn't really need to make it be that she did turn into them. I would have believed it a little bit better if it was like, you know, there are certain times I can't control it. You know, imagine being intimate with somebody and then you turn into them. Like that one, I would have believed, that one I would have felt a little bit more connection to, or a little bit better, rather than just I can't ever have contact with somebody, you know. I don't know, but I liked her. I thought she was a fine character. That just bugged me that they went down that road, that's all. But I guess they needed a reason for them all to rob the bank, of course, as we saw, and that was fine.
Now, I must say, when she turned into that chap with the suit and the gray hair, at that moment there was for me a bit of a disconnect, because I thought maybe it's because I'd watched City of Death last week, but I did feel that they were in a simulation of it. They were having a look at the edit all, you know, looking at 3D schematics sort of situation before I realized.
Was it the CGI in the scene?
I think it might have been, yeah.
Which admittedly, you could tell in that scene that obviously it was CGI, and you could also tell in the end scene when they let the two aliens free. That they were on a big CGI background there. It was odd how much you could tell, but I can't say I minded it, because, for instance, I loved the look of the bank. I thought the design work on that was really great. And again, that scene had a lot of really nice camera angles, and that's something I adore in film anymore. I adore just looking at the cinematography, the beautiful camera angles that they do, the way that they can make a classic scene that everybody does, just a regular old-fashioned two-shot, just looks so impressive just by changing that angle and using the architecture of a building to help accent the angle. That there was a lot of really good visuals all throughout this episode, I thought. So I did like that. So while I did notice those two bits, like you were just saying there, or I said there, that the CGI was a bit noticeable, I tried not to let it bother me, I guess, just because there was a lot of really nice imagery in the story.
Well, you should not bother you, really.
No. Well, you know, sometimes CGI does bother me, and it's not usually architecture. It's not usually like metal structures or man-made things. It's usually when they do it for living creatures, I can't stand it because it's so obvious. Generally, architecture and landscapes and so on usually look very good. So I was surprised to see that they looked as out of place as they did. And not horrible. I mean, obviously, they looked really nice. And the end scene with the Doctor and Clara standing there with that nice sunset behind them, I actually really liked the way it looked. I mean, yes, it was clearly CGI, but I liked it. I thought it had a really nice visual to it. So I didn't mind that so much. I agree with you in the beginning that it did almost seem like they were in a simulation rather than it was really happening. And I think that was maybe more the disconnect there. But once I realized it was all really happening, it didn't bother me. I was okay with it, because, like I said, there was just a lot of good visuals.
Okay. What about Keeley Hawes? I don't know what I was expecting to find in the vault, but I wasn't expecting to find a clone.
While we've been talking about this, I've been thinking about what I was thinking, because I didn't watch the trailer. I like to believe that made me a little more blank to the prospects. I mean, I didn't even consider the fact that it would have been a time job. I didn't even consider the fact, like, you know, I didn't. Well, I mean, I know it's called Time Heist, but, you know, it's Doctor Who, isn't it? You know, I didn't actually twig that they'd actually gone back in time. And that's how things were being played out. My feeling was in the vault, probably in the way that I've imagined it in a New Adventures novel or maybe a McCoy era, that it had been the TARDIS that was in the vault, which is why they had to go and do the.
Yeah.
And when Keeley turned round, I didn't think it was a clone. I thought the the inverted commas, the payoff was is that she was the manager and she was the owner. And
I thought I thought that too.
It's interesting when we talk about it, all these things that it is obvious. And then you think when you look back, no, it wasn't to me at the time. I wasn't quite on the right track. And I kind of like that sometimes. I like sometimes when you can just sit in the moment and sometimes you don't, you're not overly trying to work it out. And especially one like this where there's no, there is a mystery, but it's fast paced enough that you're not really trying to work it out. You're just trying to keep up. At least I was anyway. So I liked it for that. There was a really good pace to it. And I liked the fact that they seemed to be aware that they needed the time for this one. So they took out all the things, as I've said to you before, with Into the Dalek, as I've said many times now, I thought the Danny Pink thing was too long and too inserted. And they lost a lot of time for having that in there. And in this one, you did have a little of Danny, but it was very short, very quick, and it just allowed the show to keep moving on. You know, it gave you the data that she was very into him still and they were going out and whatever, and that was all you needed to know, moving on. And I thought I gave it a nice speed and a change from last week, even though there was a certain similarities in last week in the fact that we're playing with time and timey-wimey stuff, the pacing was very different. And I thought that was a good move, a good choice in order there.
That is one thing. I agree. I think it was a nicer pace this time. And when they first showed the Danny situation in the beginning, I did actually start to feel like you have been lately, where I was like, okay, you know, enough. Let's just get Danny on board because I'm tired of doing these two life things happening one episode. Mainly because I realize, like, you know, we're not the casual viewer. We watch these things over and over again in many cases. Mm-hmm. And with that, too, we also have the fact that we want to show it and share it. So you take an episode that you really love and you want to show it to somebody that you think is going to make them get hooked in the episode. They're going to feel a little disconnected if there's a secondary story running that is so largely placed within a singular episode. And I think that they need to be cautious of that, but I thought this one handled it very well. This was, like, you know, aside from the tiny little bit at the beginning, it seems like yeah, there's a little bit more there, but don't worry, I'll figure that out later. It wasn't as intrusive with the main story, which is very good. So I agree there. Had another thought, but I've lost it again. I'll come back to it if I remember.
Okay. Right. Well, you know, Time Heist, I think that's another episode in series 8 that I feel happy to rewatch. And I think
I've been very happy with this run. I don't know what Moff is doing or what he decided to change, but it's been a very good series so far.
I still think a lot of it is on Capaldi, and again, I really got Smith by the end of it, but I just feel it's not so much that Smith wasn't any good. I still really do believe that while he was very fluid by the end, you couldn't really fault his performance at all. You never felt he was out of the zone. His material was still very ineffectual. It was still quite Peter Davison. There wasn't that much you could imagine him being able to chew upon there. The delivery of the lines was perfect. And the lines themselves were very good, and they were very funny a lot of the time. But there was nothing really to challenge him. It never felt like there was much to challenge him. While Capaldi's got a lot of stuff which challenges your perception of the character and challenges the viewer, and you can see he's enjoying because there's far more variety to him than Smith was allowed. And I think that's playing through a lot, that he's got a lot. And because he's got a lot, it's somehow giving Jenna more as well. I'm not quite sure how that's happening. But she seems to, and it not simply that she has more time on the screen, she just has more presence on the screen. But I still think that's probably been building up since Day of the Doctor, to be honest. They seem to be more confident with her.
Yeah, well,
I was just going to say, I think, wonder if the Impossible Girl thing was actually limiting to them, as if they didn't know quite how to handle her with that. And once they
I agree. Yeah. Totally agree with that, because once they surpassed that with Name of the Doctor, she started to get a lot better because you could focus on her rather than the mystery surrounding her. So yeah, I agree. Since Day of the Doctor, they did a lot more with her.
I mean, I love that bit. I love that bit in Listen where she smacks him on the head for in front of little Danny as he's trying to tell him that it's to be scared of the dark. And there's just some very nice little sharp moments between them, which works. And they're slightly vulnerable at the same time. Capaldi's very good at... It's funny because they used to say Smith was brilliant because Smith felt like an old man in a young person's body. Well, Capaldi does have a sort of slight sort of childishness about the way he moves and the way he reacts. And when she sort of smacks him for, you know, being so insensitive, he does look like a sort of scorned schoolboy. He's shocked. He doesn't quite understand it. And I think that's a very nice juxtaposition too.
I love all the subtleties he's been putting in there. Myself, I mean, like he, I like when he can get silly. Again, we saw more of that smile in this episode that we were talking about last time, and I loved that. I loved watching him get excited because that was something that was missing in like the first two episodes or so. And not that it was bad that it was missing. It's just it wasn't there. It was nice to see that serious side and to see the comedy play out with that serious side, but to see like that little bit of excitement, those little sparks. I'm really loving all the little subtle ways that he plays the aspects of this character.
Mm. Yeah, and I one of the reasons I'm enjoying Doctor Who so much is because of Peter Capaldi. Most definitely. Because he just does, and I agree with what you both just said there, really. I can't really add anything to it. He just brings something else into it that makes me feel that... He's the same character as
you know.
Is it
down to
I've switched vibration off, so I have no idea what is vibrating. I assume it's my phone, unless it's my ear.
It's not good there.
Maybe you're just paying a little too much attention than I'd prefer to my vibrating ear.
Oh, we're not supposed to talk about that, are we?
No, we're not. Yeah, it's okay. Don't worry about it.
James and the giant vibrating ear.
I don't understand why it keeps vibrating. It says vibration off, so why are you vibrating, you bastard, is sort of my feeling on this matter. Anyway.
Okay. Well, let's move on.
Go on, then.
Sure, yeah.
Shall we move on? Or do we want to... Because we rated the four episodes last week, and obviously we're not going to do the same thing again. But what's the first episode of Doctor Who Series 8 that you would choose, of what we've seen so far, that you would choose to rewatch?
Ooh.
Mm.
Interesting. That's tough, because I'll tell you what, I'm so glad to actually be able to say that's tough. Rather than make it be such an obvious choice, because that seems like a problem I haven't had for a while. Because I was really a big fan of Into Dalek, but right now I would say Listen and Time Heist are the two tough ones making this very hard for me.
Yeah, I think, I must admit, I've got a bit like Time of the Doctor and a bit like End of Time, where I would say those three episodes are not perfect in any way. There's aspects of them which make them really quite enjoyable to watch. I mean, Deep Breath was just fascinating just because it was this whole concept of how a companion deals with the change of someone that they care about. And that is quite fascinating. I could probably go back and rewatch that again just simply for that aspect of watching Clara having to come to terms. And, you know, from a drama point of view, that's very, very interesting. So it'd be probably either that or Listen, because Listen was just really well sculpted. Mm-hmm. I'll probably go with Listen because it's just a very good bit of storytelling.
Okay. I would probably go for the same as Brian. I think I'd probably go for Listen or Time Heist. However, in reality, the episode that I will be rewatching next is Deep Breath, because the BBC have sent me the preview disc for the DVD release, which I will probably talk about next week. Let's move on to a couple of... Well, Donald Tosh... In particular, specifically, has been talking to the I think it was the Sunday Post yesterday, which is a Scottish newspaper for you Americans. Scotland's the bit at the top of the United Kingdom for you Americans.
Still is.
And it still is in the United Kingdom for you Scots. Mm. And. Donald Tosh is ex-script editor of Doctor Who from 65 to 66. A lot of his era are among those that are missing, sadly, such as The Massacre. Now, he's it's a very good interview, and we've got a link on Castorbis. We've picked some of our highlights basically on Castorbis, and obviously there'll be a link in the show notes. He says about Doctor Who latterly, towards the end of its run and the return, I thought Doctor Who improved a lot towards the end of its first run on television with Sylvester McCoy. They had a clever young script editor in Andrew Carmel, and they brought new and proper life to it. But I do enjoy it now. I enjoy the jokes and the humour that underlines everything. It's much darker these days, but it really challenges the mind much more than a lot of things it did after I left. It's virtually an adult programme. Which brings us... I mean, I don't know whether he's true, whether that's true or not, and I'll let you guys mull this in a moment. But that does bring us to the fact that this week's episode, The Caretaker, and so we're led to understand the remainder of Series 8, is airing at 8:30.
But isn't that the change in scheduling because what is that? Strictly Come Dancing is coming back on, and they're changing the whole show back to that time, or is this because something else is happening in the story?
I don't think it's purely because of Strictly, because in the past, Doctor Who was on before Strictly.
So it's potentially because they're getting darker with the stories.
I think there's going to be a bit of 50-50 in this.
Well, I do agree with him that when they got into Sylvester McCoy's era, the show started to turn around. And I said many times that it's a shame that it got canceled the year before his last season actually aired, which really, to me, showed that the show was really improving and could be strong again. So I completely agree with that. But I do agree that the show is getting a bit more, I don't want to say adult. It's definitely more serious. In a way. And I don't know. I mean, there are certain episodes that friends of mine have said, and I think, Christian, you even said the same, that you would hold off certain episodes from your kids.
Yeah, definitely.
And I get that. And that's okay. But to me, I think that's a good sign because, you know, the show, as much as people want to say it was a kids program, it was always a family program. And I think that's a good thing. I think that's a good sign that it shows that it's still for the family.
Yeah. I mean, my little boy's three. Erin Rose isn't really interested in it at all. She's not interested. Brucey, basically, he has trouble going to sleep on a night. Not because he watches Doctor Who, I might add. He can't, because they're twins and they're currently sharing a room, so they won't settle in the same room. So we separate them at bedtime, and he sleeps on the settee until he's gone, and then we take him up to bed. And some nights when Kerry's doing her activism, me and him will sit and watch TV, and maybe we'll watch The Simpsons, or sometimes we'll watch Doctor Who. I mean, the last two Doctor Who's he won't be watching. When I was three, because I discussed this with old mother Castorbis, my mum, and she asked me why on earth I was letting him watch Doctor Who. I was watching it when I was three. Was my very sensible answer. Now, there is probably quite a difference there in that Douglas Adams was script editing when I was three. So I think I'm probably going to be going backwards with him, maybe watching some of, more jovial episodes, I imagine. He certainly won't be watching Time Heist because that monster, the Teller was a very impressive monster. And
I thought it was going to be rubbish from the, you know, the original series teasers that they played out. I thought he looked rubbish. Oh my God, what the hell is that? And yeah, they played it. He was very formidable.
Yeah. And you know, what he did to that guy, you know, that's not for the eyes of a 3-year-old. So, I think it is getting darker.
But then is there a certain sensitivity issue? I mean, I remember, you know, the X-Files these days, even though it can sometimes be edited, will be on during the day. And, you know, kids could watch that, or you could even look at EastEnders being a very gritty and dark soap, which people watch with their kids. Mm-hmm. Are kids a little less, you know, there's a change, sensitization? I know three is obviously an age where it's probably a little early to be able to say either way.
Well, I think with the X-Files, you know, BBC's never, that I can think of, since maybe... you know, Dallas and Dynasty, that sort of time, American TV shows with the respect that they deserve when they have very good TV shows and put them on at the right time. They're forever, whenever there's an American TV show on the BBC, it's either put on BBC Two or BBC Four, whatever, or it's put on at, 11 o'clock at night.
Mm.
So I don't think that's necessarily indicative of how dark it was. I'm not disagreeing that it wasn't. I'm just saying,
no, but I'm saying if you got a satellite television, you'll find on, I can't remember whether it was Bravo or something, X-Files would be on at 3 p.m.
Mm.
And there would be no, or Sky certainly did it at that time when it was running them. Yeah. So what I'm saying is that the television content is stuff that, you know, there would be stuff on the X-Files that you would only get on an 18 certificate back in 1979. You know, I mean, even maybe even Doctor Who to a certain degree, as you say. What kids will see on there, it won't bother them, which I imagine would have probably bothered us more as kids, because we would have had a different sort of sensitization. So I think there is a slight change like that.
Absolutely. TV and movies are changing a lot. I mean, you take you can go ahead and watch a network TV show over here, which are basically, there are non-cable channels. There are three major networks that are accessible to everyone, which are NBC, ABC, and CBS. And, you know, you can watch people now swearing a heck of a lot more, or using certain words that they never would have done before. I remember, for instance, David Duchovny got away with cursing in the X-Files movie because it was something he had wanted to do in the show, because he just felt pushing those boundaries, or it was more believable and so on. And I remember hearing it in the movie and it felt so weird because it wasn't in the show. But then you get to later seasons of the show and he uses the same word, and it's like, this is just different. It's like how different the world was even just, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago for TV. So it's changing in that respect. They're getting a bit more racy with what they will show. Not necessarily full-on nudity on network TV, but they get a little bit more racy with that. So it does make me wonder how much kids' shows have changed. Because I watch some of the things that my niece and nephews watch. And, you know, I don't have any examples, but at some points I'm just sitting there watching, like, did they really just say what they just said there? It's weird to see how things have changed. Huh. You know, granted, I don't think they're doing anything scary, like what's happening here in Doctor Who, and we obviously have to worry about giving the kids nightmares. But it is odd how desensitized they're becoming to certain words or certain situations.
It's a darker, do you think it's a darker series in the sense of its visual tonality? I mean, I remember there was a lot of Smiths, there was a lot of vibrancy, especially in, say, Series 6, in the colours. But the colour palettes in this one, bar Robin of Sherwood, have been, in my head, have been quite dark. It's sort of very, going down this sort of cold blues. And is that just me? I'm not sure. There's vibrancy in this colour. There's a few in this.
No, I've seen it. I agree with you. See, it's weird because I'm not looking at it as the show's getting too dark kind of thing. I'm looking at it and really enjoying it. Mm. For example, I've said before, the Suntaran stratagem. They used too many like purple and green lights, making it look like it was a Sarah Jane Adventures episode. You know, the whole lighting of that episode and the way the sets looked just looked kiddish. And if they really wanted to make the Suntarans seem like an actual menacing warrior race, I think that was the wrong way to go. So when I look at things like this, I look at them as like, this feels right. Like with Robin Hood, like you said, it was obviously a different feel to the rest, but it made sense for the way they were trying to tell that story. And so therefore I was okay with it. But the other stuff, like certainly with Time Heist, I loved, again, like I said, I loved all the visuals. I thought they were good. If they had kitted that up or brightened things up in such a way that it felt weird. In some ways, it would bring me back to what they did with Sylvester McCoy's era. You know, I mean, think back to the Happiness Patrol. You know, it might not have been such a horrible story, in all honesty, if I could say that. But it's if they just didn't treat it so corny in every respect. And same thing with Paradise Towers. You know, the stories could have worked if they let the story be the quirky thing and let the sets and the costumes actually be more realistic. So I don't mind it in those respects, but I do see what you're saying. There definitely is a palette.
James, how's your battery bearing up?
I am my battery is fine despite all the vibrating.
Good.
I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, shall we move on to the recommendations?
Sure.
Yes. Can do. There was something on the tip of my brain or on the tip of my earlobe. I can't think which that I wanted to say, and I can't remember what it is. So I think we'll go into recommendations, and then I will spoil everything by breaking up the pacing of the podcast episode with whatever it was I was going to say.
Well, that would be a change.
That's
okay, so we'll do recommendations now, dear listener, in which the Casterbridge team of James, Brian, and myself will discuss and suggest something related to Doctor Who, or quite often not related to Doctor Who, but don't let that put you off. And maybe to recommend that either the rest of us check it out, or maybe you too check it out. So, Brian, do you want to go first?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been dying to go for. Okay. I haven't actually watched anything new or even. No, that's not true. I listened to something new. Well, thank
you.
You've
been watching
Midsommar
Murders, haven't you?
I have. Well, but I recommended it last time. You know what, though? What's funny is I did just watch an episode with Danny Pink. What's
did
his
you?
Real name? I've lost it now. Yeah, he was in. He was. What is it?
Samuel Anderson.
Samuel Anderson, yes. Yeah, he was in it, and he was good. He's a good actor. He's a very good actor.
Which episode was this? Remind me.
I'll have to go back to my watch list here. One moment while I get there. But it was the one where he was delivering organic vegetables, but he was also he had a sly under the counter escort service working at the same time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that rings a bell.
Yeah, and it was...
That's quite a recent one. That's from last year, I think. Is it?
Yeah. What I'm watching right now were the 2011-2012 series. So I'm actually into 2012 right now. I can't remember which one it actually was here now, unfortunately, because I had off yesterday, so I've just been watching them.
Okay. We'll dig it out and we'll put it in the show notes for our Sam Anderson loving listener.
Yeah, but he was good. Yes, it was. I remember now because it was the one with famous actresses were in it. Like they did a film festival in Midsommar, and was it 2011 or 12? Darn it, I remember. I can't remember that now, unfortunately. But it was the one where these two actresses were basically the one had come to town, and there was.
She used to live there years and years ago.
Exactly, yes. Right. And they were sisters, and there was a big rivalry and so on. And the reason I remember that is because there was one guy who was like one of those, I say one of those, but it's us, one of those over-enthusiastic fans who collects everything and knows every fact about these particular actresses and their films and so on. And he had recognized Danny. And there was supposed to be an implication that not only did his escort services provide services to the ladies, but also to the men.
Right, right.
So, yeah. But I don't know what they never really kind of even went down that road when they made the suggestion. They never really delved a little bit deeper into it. But, yeah, no, it was a really good episode, too, actually. I really enjoyed it. I mean, they've all been good. One of the things I always say about this show, with two exceptions in these round of episodes I've been watching, I generally have a tough time trying to figure out who actually did it.
Mm.
And that's not something that happens with like cop shows or murder mysteries over here. Like I said, it's a lot of times where you can look at it and say, oh, there's that famous actor or actress, they did it. And the only and the two cases that I did guess it here was because of that. It was because they were two famous British actors that I know of that it was like, okay, they had to have done it. But I'm starting to also get the 15 seasons, I'm starting to get the theme of the show where, you know, you have all of these people with all of these grand motives and there's complete, perfect reason why Joe would kill this person. But really, it was actually not Joe. It was the butcher's baker's sister, because years ago when they were in high school, something happened that we didn't really find out about till the last 5 minutes. But there you go, which I don't mind. It's funny, but it's like I'm starting to look for those things now. I find myself sitting there going, OK, who are they not showing the most here? Who is it that they're not focusing on?
Yeah.
It must be you now, you know, so it's great. It's great fun. I love the characters. And I always refer to the show as the polite murder mystery just because of the way they all handle it, the way the cops are. There's no like gritty drama to it. There's no attitudes or anything. It's just it's very well written. It's a great mystery every time and always well acted. Plus, I love the countryside. I love where they film the show, all the locations that they use and everything. So
one of my cousins just moved into that area. Or is on the about to move into that area.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it? It's a real area?
No, it's not a real area. They film it over several places. There's bits in Oxfordshire and bits in other places. Surrey and places on there. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's nice. I've got Netflix just put on the two seasons that I spoke about, the 2012 and the 2011 So I had watched all the other seasons prior to that. So when they put these on here, I was really excited for that. But I'm on the last episode that Netflix has now. So I know there are more seasons after it, but I don't have access to them. So I'm going to be a little bummed when this is done.
Okay.
I'm also going to be a little bummed though, because I did some reading up and I know that Jones leaves the show in the very next season, which bums me out because I really like Jones.
Yeah,
I don't know how he leaves, but I like him a lot.
Don't get too upset.
Yeah.
The new guy seems to be quite good anyway.
Good.
So, is that your only recommendation, Brian?
Yeah, I'll also say check out Sylvester McCoy's new Big Finish plays. That's where I was going to go. But yeah, let's stick with Midsommar. People enjoy it. It's fun. Okay.
And next on the Midsommar Murders podcast with an M is... I'll go next, James.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he sounds ecstatic, doesn't he? And... at the beginning of today's podcast with the K, you probably heard the voice of John Guiler. And I have been fortunate enough to have been sent a copy of his reading of Dr. Omega. And it is a lot of fun. I'm not going to go into it in too much detail because I've only listened to one disc at the moment. And it is quite a long adventure because he's basically read the entire book. Newly translated into English. And... there's a little bit of multimedia on there as well, so you get a little introduction from John. I think we can call him John now. I think we've spoken to him enough times to be able to use his first name, haven't we? And that's always something I've had trouble with as a child, is using people's names. And I take it with me into adulthood. When I'm not speaking to Brian or James, I call them by their surnames, Mr. Turnover and Mr. McLean. So... John Guiler has read Dr. Omega. It's really good fun. John Guiler is as probably you might have noticed, because we probably know him more for his voice work. He has got a really good voice, and he's got an excellent voice for reading. I would be very surprised and disappointed if he doesn't get more voice work. You know, and I'm not saying voice work being William Hartnell or Tom Baker, but I just mean general voice work. His reading voice is very, very listenable. Very much enjoy listening to that, and I'm not really a big fan of audiobooks either. I'm mainly the audiobooks I listen to are read by Nigel Planer, and they're by Terry Pratchett usually. Firstly, good work, John. I really much enjoyed it. Also, thank you for sending it. And thirdly, dear listener, you should get a copy of Dr. Omega, the audiobook read by John Guiler. James McLean. Your recommendation?
I re-listened to the Mutant Phase this week. I think that's about as much as I've done Doctor Who wise, and okay. I still quite enjoy that. It shocks me to think how old it is, to be honest.
So 2004.
Yeah, well, bloody long time ago. Hmm. And it's just enjoyable to occasionally go back and just revel in the amount of extended media that we have. I think it's just so cool that, in a sense, you know, I know we've said this before, how many shows get the opportunity to sort of extend their life after their life is gone? I mean, Peter Davison's era was long gone, you know, 30 years ago or whatever, and it was finished. 3 years, done. And now you sort of get these weird moments of experiencing them again with the actors, the characters, and writing, which is just as on par as anywhere, if not better than in my other places. So, yeah, I'm afraid I'm just going to sort of roll out another recommendation to anything Big Finish, really. So, including Sylvester McCoy's latest stuff, which I've not listened to, but Brian seems to think is rather good.
Okay.
Sylvester's stuff is always good, I think, with Big Finish. I think he gets a lot of the good stories.
While we're on the topic of Sylvester McCoy, his Twitter page has just... I think it's related to the Ministry of Chance. Well, basically, the Ministry of Chance, if you haven't heard that already, dear listener, is very good. And also, they're making it into a film.
I'm very curious about the film. I haven't heard the audio, but I saw some of the test footage or the teaser footage for it.
Yeah.
I'm very curious to see what this little world is about.
Okay. Yes. There's lots of things going on in the world of Doctor Who and related worlds of Doctor Who at the moment. There's a couple of things I would like to say. First of all, If you're using eBay to purchase Doctor Who material, or even not Doctor Who material, if you go on eBay looking at Doctor Who material and then find yourself looking at iPhones and things like that, there's been a big security scare with eBay lately. So I would basically say to people to just ease off eBay for a while until they sort themselves out. This isn't directly related to Doctor Who, as you know, but I'm telling you this in my capacity as the online security editor of a big website called makeyouseof.com. eBay is not secure, and there's all sorts of vulnerabilities. There's been a cross-site scripting vulnerability of late, which they say they've sorted out, but there's nowhere. There's just a lack of clarity from eBay. So be careful with eBay. More onto Doctor Who, though, is David Tennant. Guys, have either of you seen this new David Tennant film? And it's getting very good reviews. Billy Connolly's in it as well. He's in a lot of the trailers, and David Tennant's in it, and various other people are in it. I'm quite intrigued to find out if it's as funny as people are saying it is.
The trailers did look good for it, and I'm not normally one for like those types of movies, but I'm also not one of those guys that's just going to go, oh, David Tennant's in it, I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, exactly.
The trailer.
Who of us here have seen the Postman Pat movie?
Right.
Exactly.
I don't even know what that is. Watching it, I was very impressed with Billy Connolly's character and his, and I like him as an actor too. And the film just looked good. The kids actually, when it comes a lot of times to kids on film, and they try and make them like a big deal within the story, sometimes it puts me off, and I don't know why that is. I mean, I've always been like that, even ever since I was a kid. But it seemed like there were a lot of funny moments from the kids and from Billy Connolly and so on. So I was interested in seeing it. Like I don't know. It just looked good. It looked fun. It looked like an hour of fun or 2 hours of fun. So yeah, I'm curious to see it.
Okay. Before we proceed, James, I just want to know: are you still playing Legacy?
I'm not. That was something I was going to bring up in the podcast. The only thing I said I was going to bring up and I didn't bring up, but yeah. I couldn't remember.
Was that it?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Well, no. Okay. Your question. I've not been playing Legacy because I stopped. I mean, they very kindly gave me a few updates to the stuff that I missed. For those who didn't know, there was a problem on my software update, and the cloud didn't save stuff, and it put me back 2 months or so. They gave me an update on the characters, but it still didn't do anything really. It still meant I'd lost 2 months. But every time I tried to play it on the Kindle, it just keeps freezing and crashing. But my point was going to be, was in the last episode, they talked about the Suntarans trying to take over time. There was just an off comment he makes when he's half awake. And I thought was that a reference to Legacy, because that was the first storyline, was the Suntarans.
Isn't it the same line he also says in Robot?
Might be. It's been a long time since I've seen Robot.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. So you're not playing it anymore then?
No, I would like to. As I say, I might do it if I can get it to stop freezing. I would go back to it and start building up, but it's. I'm just asking why. Why are you asking? What's the reason for you asking? What's the link to this? What's the segue to the news data that has spurned your interest in asking me this question about Legacy?
Well, because I know they've had an update recently.
Another one.
Yeah, and they've got this. Well, it's not an update. They've got the episodic content based on each week of Doctor Who. For instance, this week, the teller is an enemy. Do you follow?
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So that's my only real reason for asking you.
Oh no, it was a good reason for asking, and yes, go and play it as long as it doesn't freeze on you. I'm sure it's a great game.
Indeed.
He says sourly.
We noticed. So, dear listener, that brings us to the close of this week's Casterbus podcast with a K. If you have anything you would like to add to our podcast, you can leave it in the comments below on the Casterbus page. If you're on Audioboo, you can record a message to us, which we might listen to. And if you're on Stitcher.com, then just use your usual feedback method for Stitcher.com, which the details of which I don't actually know. You can also use Twitter and Facebook. And if you're listening on iTunes, we would be very, very honoured if you would rate us. It would help us immeasurably. Until next time, it's goodbye. And from my echo as well.